Good day and welcome to the Drinker Biddle presentation, Reg BI, What Does Best Interest Mean? Conference call. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Fred Riche. Please go ahead, sir.
Well, Stephanie, thank you very much, and hello, everybody. This is the second 2018 audiocast by what we call our broker-dealer insight team. And as an announcement, though, we've combined our RIA team, our broker-dealer team, and our ERISA team, all who focus on standards of care for plans, IRAs, wealth management accounts, RIAs, broker-dealers, all of that. We've combined that into something that we've now called the Best Practice Compliance Group, or the Best Interest, rather, Compliance Group. And we'll be announcing that more formally in the future. But everybody on the call today is part of that team. And let me introduce them. First, from our broker-dealer or FINRA group, we have Sandy Granum, who is the chair of that group and who's very well known in the practice area. With Sandy from that group are Tracy Salmon Smith and Jamie Hellman. So we've got three broker-dealer attorneys on this call to give you some insights into what's going on with Reg BI, at least the proposal. Also on the call is Jim Lundy. Jim is a SEC attorney. He was an enforcement in a prior life, and he's now a partner with the firm. And finally, on the call with me is from the ERISA practice group, together with me, is Brad Campbell, who's the former assistant secretary at the Department of Labor for the Employee Benefits Security Administration, which is the group that both provides regulation and guidance on fiduciary standards and enforces them. So you've got the whole mix here. You've got FINRA, SEC, and ERISA. This session is being recorded, and it will be posted in a private area of our database, and you all will have access to it in two ways. First, and the easiest way, is that once it's been posted, let's say 3 or 4 business days from now, you'll get an email. If you registered for the program, you'll get an email, and that's for you and your comrades at work to go listen to it if you'd like to. Also, if you, for any reason, don't get the email, it'll be posted under www.drinkerbiddle, the firm name, drinkerbiddle.com, under what's called the Insights and Events tab, Insights and Events tab. So wait maybe till Monday or Tuesday, and it should be there as well. Finally, if you aren't already signed up for our broker-dealer blog, you should be if you're interested in this area, and you must be, or you wouldn't be on the call. So it's www.brokerdealerlawblog, one word, brokerdealerlawblog, one word, .com. And we post articles there almost every week on some aspect of standard of care for broker-dealers and their representatives. With that fairly long-winded introduction, let me get the program underway, and I'll do that by turning it over to Sandy Granum. Sandy, you're up.
Thank you, Fred. Glad you could make it to this call. I just wanted to give you a brief history that sort of leads into Reg BI. On April 18, 2018, as the SEC proposed for public comment a 3-part regulatory package, which SEC Chairman Jay Clayton has advised with the SEC's steps to clarify and enhance current regulations in response to the DOL fiduciary duty rule, which was for a time implemented by the Department of Labor. While that rule was vacated by the Fifth Circuit on March 15, as of this discussion, the Fifth Circuit has not yet issued a mandate effectuating that vacatur. However, as all of the potential petitions for rehearing have now been rejected by the Fifth Circuit, we expect that a mandate should be issued any time now. But just as a historical background, you may recall back in July 2010, Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform Act, Section 913, had called for the SEC to conduct a study to evaluate the effectiveness of existing legal and regulatory standards of care for brokers, dealers, investment advisors, persons associated with brokers or dealers, and persons associated with investment advisors, for providing personalized investment advice and recommendations about securities to real estate customers. As a result, the SEC was given a mandate to determine if the existing regulatory and legal standards of care had any gaps or shortcomings. They were also given rulemaking authority necessary or appropriate to address the legal regulatory standards of care. And by January 2011, 6 months later, the SEC had in fact completed a report and found public confusion around the standard of care, and the SEC staff recommended a uniform fiduciary standard. In fact, the staff's specific recommendation was that the standard of conduct for all brokers, dealers, and investment advisors when providing personalized investment advice about securities to retail customers and for such other customers as the commission may rule provide shall be to act in the best interest of the customer without regard to the financial or other interest of the broker, dealer, or investment advisor providing the advice. However, the SEC commissioners were unable to reach a consensus on what that rule should be, and in the interim, the Obama administration instructed the DOL to protect retirement assets. The DOL's fiduciary rule was a manifestation of that mandate and resulted in the prudent man and ERISA-type fiduciary standards being applied to retirement funds, regardless of who the financial professional was advising on those assets. After the DOL rule met with significant resistance and legal challenge, the SEC on April 18th, as we said, released this proposed rule. The rule and comments are three parts, one addressed to broker-dealers, which is what we'll be discussing today, and their associated persons, one addressed to investment advisors, which will follow in a subsequent call that we will set, and one addressed to the documentation each group would use for their clients, which will be addressed in both calls. Reg BI, or Reg the Best Interest, will apply to broker-dealers and associated persons at the time of recommendation of any security transaction or investment strategy involving securities to a retail customer and will require that the broker-dealer and associated person act in the best interest of the retail customer without placing their own financial and other interests ahead of the interest of the customer. So in essence, it follows the staff's recommendation back from 2011. And what does that require? Well, to quote the SEC, the broker-dealer or natural person who is an associated person of a broker-dealer in making the recommendation exercises reasonable diligence, care, skill, and prudence to, one, understand the potential risk and the rewards associated with the recommendation and to have a reasonable basis to believe that the recommendation could be in the best interest of at least some retail customers. Two, to have a reasonable basis to believe that the recommendation is in the best interest of a particular retail customer based upon that retail customer's investment profile and the potential risks and rewards associated with the recommendation. And three, have a reasonable basis to believe that a series of recommendation transactions, even in the retail customer's best interest, when viewed in isolation, is not excessive and is in the retail customer's best interest when taken together in light of the retail customer's investment profile. And that latter one, the third portion of that requirement, will sound familiar to you because it is, in essence, FINRA's Rule 2111, the suitability rule, and it's the supplemental material 05C components of suitability and obligations, and it is the quantitative analysis applied to whether there is excessive trading in a client's account. Under the present rule, 2111, FINRA requires that the broker have control for this to be applicable, so they would have control of the account. Here, that control provision is being removed. So if you think about it, this new best interest standard sounds a lot like suitability. So Tracy, would you say this was a suitability plus standard? What does it really mean? And when does it become something more or less than suitability?
Okay, thank you, Sandy. Before this proposal had come out, it had been reported that the commission was leaning towards a suitability plus standard for the brokerage industry, something a bit more robust than the current standard that was in place. As Sandy mentioned, the proposal doesn't actually define best interest, and the proposal actually lacks some clarity. Reg BI appears to place the best interest standard of conduct on the broker-dealer, but not a standard that rises to the level of a fiduciary duty. And as Sandy mentioned, under the proposal, the broker is required to act in the best interest of retail customer when making a recommendation of any securities transaction or investment strategy involving securities to a retail customer. Now, also, as Sandy mentioned, the FINRA Rule 2111, which is known as the suitability rule for broker-dealers, requires that the firm and their brokers have a reasonable basis to believe that each securities transaction they recommend is suitable for the investor. And the rule is based on the fundamental requirement that all FINRA firms and their brokers deal fairly with their customers. Now, under Reg BI, the proposal, it actually tracks three aspects of FINRA's suitability rule. One, the reasonable basis for suitability. Two, customer-specific suitability. And three, quantitative suitability. Now, we can consider Reg BI as FINRA suitability plus with the added disclosures and written policies and procedures that are outlined in the proposed reg. And the distinction between Reg BI and the FINRA rule for suitability is the removal of the present qualified that quantitative suitability is applicable only when a member or associated person has actual or de facto control over a customer's account. So that would be a significant alteration to the FINRA suitability rule. This quantitative suitability requirement adds to the broker's responsibilities that he or she not trade excessively in customer's account, and it doesn't require a scienter as the quantitative suitability requirement for churning, and the proposal only requires negligence. Now, when you look at the proposed rule, suitability is incorporated into the proposed standard with regard to recommendations of securities transactions. Now, depending on the comments that are received during the comment period from, you know, the various retail investors, financial service professionals, that may help the commission to actually refine and provide a clearer standards and requirements. So if suitability plus is the goal of the regulation, then hopefully when we get to the final rule, there will be an explanation as to exactly what the plus is. But at this point, the rule is, again, incorporates the suitability standard for the broker-dealers. Now, Jamie, can you tell us what kind of accounts are covered by Reg BI?
Sure, Tracy. Reg BI would cover a brokerage account, not an advisory account. It would cover the recommendation of any securities transaction or investment strategy that a broker-dealer or associated person provides to a retail customer. A security transaction includes a purchase, sale, and exchange, and may also include recommendations to roll over or transfer assets from one type of account to another, such as recommendations to roll over or transfer assets in an ERISA account to an IRA. And Reg BI, as Sandy had mentioned, only applies to recommendations, not to the execution of a recommended transaction.
So who is the retail customer in this scenario?
Sure. Reg BI defines a retail customer as a person or their legal representative that receives a recommendation or any security transaction or investment strategy involving securities from a broker, dealer, or a natural person who is an associated person of a broker or dealer and uses the recommendation primarily for personal, family, or household purposes. This proposed definition includes institutional investors if they use the recommendation primarily for personal, family, or household purposes. It also includes trusts that represent the assets of a natural person. However, it would not apply to the relationship between an investment advisor and its advisory client, or any recommendations made by an investment advisor to an advisory client. As far as dual registrants, they would be required to comply with Reg BI only when making a recommendation in their capacity as a broker-dealer.
Or a broker.
Right.
And what about the qualified accounts? Do qualified accounts fall under Reg BI?
And I mean
by that tax-qualified accounts.
Sure. Any recommended securities transactions to IRAs or participants about investing their accounts will be subject to the best interest standard of care. But advice to plan sponsors about how to invest their retirement plans would not be. On the other hand, RIAs would be governed by a best interest standard for all advice to any of those clients. Sandy, that being said, in satisfying their best interest obligation, the broker-dealer must satisfy their care obligation. As part of the care obligation, the broker-dealer must have a reasonable basis to believe that the recommended transaction is not excessive and is in the retail customer's best interest in light of the retail customer's investment profile. Now, the retail customer investment profile includes, among other things, other investments and tax status. Therefore, if a client has a tax-qualified account, like a 401k, it appears this is something the broker-dealer would have to take into account when making his or her recommendations.
So, Fred, I'm going to ask you to intervene for just a moment. With regard to advice to a plan sponsor, in the event that a plan is not an advisory account but is rather a brokerage account, what is your belief about how Reg BI plays out to an advice to a plan sponsor?
Sandy, it looks to me like if it's advice to a plan sponsor, it would not be to a retail customer. There's that language about a legal representative of a retail customer, and I guess academically I could argue that a plan sponsor acting as a fiduciary for a plan is a legal representative, but my sense is it doesn't mean that. I think it's regrettable that the SEC wasn't clear on that, but I think my sense and that of most other people is that advice to a plan sponsor is not advice to a retail customer and is therefore not subject to the best interest. Standard of care. One of the oddities is if the person at the plan sponsor that the advice is being given to is then given advice as a participant, so for example, to take a rollover, that would be subject to the best interest standard. So advice to a plan, I don't think is. Advice to a participant appears to be.
We will get that clarified during the comment section.
We hope.
Now, Jim, I'm going to ask you, the SEC defined best interest, or will it? And do you think in any reading of how the registered investment advisor handling by the SEC will give us some insight to what the SEC is hoping that we get to in terms of best interest?
Thank you, Sandy. I think what was noticeable in reviewing the proposed rule, the two-page proposed rule, is that it did define terms such as retail customer, as you all just discussed, but the term best interest is not defined in the proposed rule. There is some discussion of it in the 400-page rule proposal document in support of the two-page proposed rule. But actually, the better discussion of what is acting in a client's best interest is within the guidance you just referenced, Sandy, and that's the guidance for RIAs issued in conjunction with proposed rule Reg BI and the proposed rule in support of the related form. And the guidance for RIAs has two important pillars to it: a duty of care and a duty of loyalty. And I know that this topic is a topic for another day, but what I'm getting to is within the duty of care discussion in the 38-page guidance, the very first subsection and discussion under the duty of care is entitled a duty to provide advice that is in the client's best interest. So a very specific discussion on this term in this guidance, but unfortunately not within the proposed two-page rule for Reg BI, nor a specific discussion, while it's discussed in a roundabout way, in the 400-page rule proposal in support of Reg BI. But in the RIA guidance, what it says is the duty of care includes a duty to make a reasonable inquiry into a client's financial situation, level of financial sophistication, investment experience and investment objectives, and a duty to personalize that advice in a way that is suitable and in the best interest of the client. So it kind of brings together what we see in Reg BI when you all just discussed the suitability type aspects of the rule. And more specifically, in the SEC, and I can say this as a proud alum, is famous for doing this in their lengthy rule proposal documents. The better detail is actually provided in a footnote, and it's the footnote to the statement I just read. It's on page 10 for those of you that haven't had a chance to read or have access to the 38-page guidance proposal. And what this does, Sandy, and I think you and I have talked about this regarding whether a suitability requirement applies to RIAs, and this footnote relates to a proposed rule back in 1994 that touched on that topic. And it goes on to say that while the rule was never passed, we believe that it reflects the Commission's interpretation that there is an existing suitability obligation under the Advisors Act, and that this particular obligation, coupled with an advisor's fiduciary duty, requires an advisor to provide advice that is in the best interest of the client. So what we see then, backing up from there, is it's the fiduciary duty coupled with the suitability obligation that equates to the advisor's obligation to act in their advisory client's best interest. Now, where we run into a hurdle, backing up, is that all of the guidance associated with Reg BI that applies to broker-dealers says we're not creating a fiduciary standard. So we're kind of in a circular way back to where we started. I think that what will need to be done is the staff of the Commission needs to go back, get a thorough understanding of that gap, and figure out how to better align the use of this best interest terminology as it's going to be applicable to the RIA versus the broker-dealer sides of the industry, because that disconnect is going to be there as long as they maintain their position, and I believe that they will, that they are not going to require broker-dealers to be fiduciaries. So that kind of, in a roundabout way, brings us back to where we started, in that within the context of Reg BI, as that applies to broker-dealers, that term is not as clearly defined or as clearly understandable as it is in the RIA guidance. So I hope that was not confusing, but it unfortunately, when it came out in the guidance, was done in a very confusing way. But getting back to where we started, the definition of best interest is unfortunately not in the two-page rule proposal for Reg BI and not handled in a very clear way in the 400-page proposal. And while it is more clear in the RIA guidance, I think unfortunately it doesn't align, because that guidance says an aspect of defining the term best interest is the fiduciary obligation of an advisor, and that obligation does not apply to broker-dealers.
So, Jim, you and I have been having these conversations for months, and when I looked at it, I thought what the SEC might be doing is filling the gap between the 1994 proposed rule that was never passed, which really sort of instituted a suitability requirement for investment advisors, but as a matter of just a standard of care had been implemented, although not passed, and so here was the opportunity to say we are, in fact, going to make a rule out of the suitability requirement for investment advisors, because when you read it, it sounds very much like the suitability rule. You're looking to investment risk tolerances, investment horizons, the same things you would be looking to for the know your customer suitability requirements, right? Their financial acumen, all those other elements that we think of in terms of what is required to know your customer and to satisfy the suitability rule is articulated in that proposal in the 38 pages for the IRA. So maybe that is a way to sort of bridge the gap. The problem is, you're right, that overlaid onto that is the fiduciary requirement for the investment advisor. So, Brad, I'll now ask you, how does this compare to what the DOL's best interest of care was? Best interest standard of care was?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. The SEC appears to have borrowed some of the concepts, and in fact, reflect some of the language from the Department of Labor's best interest standard in the fiduciary rule, and more importantly in the best interest contract exemption, where the best interest standard is specifically defined. And there's some real similarities here, but I think also it's part of the reason why, well, let's just say it reflects some of the same confusion that you and Jim just discussed with regard to, you know, is this a fiduciary standard or not? They clearly say it's not, yet it keeps using fiduciary terms and concepts in a way that makes sort of a circular logic. So, for example, in Reg BI, it says when you're making a recommendation, you shall act in the best interest of the retail customer at the time the recommendation is made, without placing the financial or other interests of the broker-dealer, et cetera, ahead of the retail customer. In the Department of Labor's BIC exemption, it says that you're making a recommendation, you're acting under the circumstances then prevailing, which is the same as saying at the time the recommendation is made, without regard to the financial or other interests of the advisor or any other party. So that part is quite similar. And later on in the standard that's in Reg BI, they import some of the other language. So, for example, when you're making this recommendation, you have to exercise reasonable diligence, care, skill, and prudence to understand the risks and the rewards, to evaluate this transaction, and to evaluate the series of transactions of which this is a part. That reasonable diligence, care, skill, and prudence is familiar, is similar to what it says in the best interest regulation, well, in the BIC exemption and the best interest definition in the DOL regulation, which says the advisor will act with the care, skill, prudence, and diligence in making those evaluations. So they borrowed some of those similar terms. Again, I think they do apply differently in that you're using that reasonable diligence, care, skill, and prudence to have a reasonable basis for belief, which is different than sort of the fiduciary standard in ERISA, which really boils down to whether the recommendation is prudent. So there are differences. But by importing some of these same words and concepts, I think it does further cloud the degree to which this is sort of suitability plus or something else.
Let me, Sandy, if I could jump in, one other similarity between BIC, the DOL's BIC or BICE, and Reg BI is later on under conflicts of interest, where it says the broker or dealer establishes, maintains, and enforces written policies and procedures reasonably designed to identify and disclose and mitigate or eliminate material conflicts of interest arising from financial incentives associated with the recommendations. What that means is that almost any form of compensation, either differentials, either has to be eliminated or it has to be disclosed and mitigated. It's that mitigation, the concept of mitigation that I think is, at least in the case of some broker-dealers, is the most difficult part of Reg BI. In the discussion preceding the proposed rule, the SEC says, well, within a particular investment category, you can mitigate by just charging the same, receiving the same compensation by the broker-dealer and or the advisor, regardless of which particular investment is recommended. If you look at that, an investment category would be mutual funds. So, for example, if all mutual funds had a 3% load and a 25 basis point trail, then that would satisfy that example. Now, that's just an example. I don't mean to say that's the rule, or I don't want anybody to think that. But another example they give is that if you're going to compare different investment categories, then compensation differentials, or financial incentives as they call them, could be mitigated by using neutral factors. Well, neutral factors and levelizing investment categories are both right out of the best interest contract exemption. So they've borrowed extensively. And I think over the long haul, this concept of mitigation, if it stays in the rule, could be every bit as powerful as the best interest standard of care. So those to me are the two biggies, and they're both from, as Brad pointed out, and as I just said, they're both from the best interest contract exemption.
Well, and just to follow up on that, Fred, because I think this is a very interesting point. The history, of course, for the Department of Labor fiduciary rule is the ERISA fiduciary standard, which would dictate that any variable compensation would be a prohibited transaction. And so they, you know, the efforts to mitigate were rooted on the notion that there could be no conflict, whereas the history of securities law, and Sandy and Jim and you all can speak much better of that than I can, is very different, that disclosure typically is what's necessary to mitigate a conflict. And so one of the big questions, I think, is what do they mean by elimination? When is elimination of a conflict required versus mitigation, and what is mitigation? To me, that's one of the big unknowns with this whole proposal. And if they're following DOL, that's a very different path than traditionally has been the way for securities regulation. If they're not following DOL, if it's just sort of a few similar notions, then I think we're in a different place. But I don't know that you can tell from the proposal in Reg BI as to what they really intend.
I agree.
No, I agree.
The significance is that they've added the word mitigate, right? Because under the 40 Act, there was, in fact, a fiduciary duty, but that was satisfied by disclosure. So it's no longer just disclosure. On the other hand, it's not the DOL elimination, right? So it's eliminate or disclose and mitigate. And so I think the adding of that means that they are now applying a new standard that we haven't seen before. It's not the 40 Act standard, but it's not quite the DOL ERISA fiduciary duty prudent man standard either. It's something that has yet to be defined. Would you agree, Fred?
Yeah, I, and you know, coming from the ERISA side of the equation, Sandy, I would think mitigate would is. I mean, my sense is it's new, just as you said. But on the ERISA side, you might say, well, gee, those are. Mitigation is analogous to the conditions that appear in prohibited transaction exemptions. So typically the prohibited transaction exemptions would say, well, you got to tone down the conflicts and you have to have some protections in place for the plan or the participants, and then we'll let you proceed even though it's conflict, even though it's prohibited by the statute. But here mitigation to me looks a lot like the kinds of conditions that would appear in a prohibited transaction exemption. So I think they're connected at the hip, but yes, it's definitely a new standard, and definitely folks have to pay attention to it.
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe it's meant to take the place of the exemption, because the exemptions, of course, came with disclosure, and here we are. We have the customer relationship summary, which is, in fact, written disclosure. So, Tracy, tell us a little bit about the form CRS.
Okay, so this form that is now would be required under the proposed rule is aimed at reducing retail investor confusion and increasing transparency. The proposed rule would require investment advisors and broker-dealers to give a standardized, high-level, short-form document, this form CRS, a client relationship summary to retail investors. The SEC's goal is to provide investors with a succinct and manageable disclosure document in plain language. It's designed to facilitate comparison across firms that offer the same or substantially similar services. There is also the requirement that and I found this interesting, that the language of this form has to be plain, concise, and direct with short sentences, active voice. It must avoid legal jargon and highly technical business terms.
Although it makes perfect rational sense, because remember the 2011 report said there is confusion.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to avoid confusion, you have to speak in English, which we tend not to do.
Correct. So, and then the other thing with the form CRS, this would be in addition to any other disclosures that would be required to be provided. However, you cannot add in any other disclosures to this form other than the information that is required in the proposal. And the other thing is that this form is to be prominently displayed on the broker-dealer website. Now, as proposed, the form CRS would be limited to 4 pages, and provide disclosures to retail investors in these following areas. One, an introduction that would briefly explain the type of accounts and services the firm offers generally. Two, the relationship and services that the firm provides to retail investors. Three, the legal standard of conduct applicable to those services. Four, the fees and costs payable by retail investors for such services. And in the instance where you have a dual registrants, there would be a requirement of a comparison between the brokerage and investment advisory services. There would be information about conflicts of interest and directions as to where to find additional information, including about the firm or its investment professional's disciplinary history and who to contact about complaints. In fact, the summary must include instructions on reporting problems to the SEC via its investor assistance hotline. And finally, there is a section of key questions for retail investors to ask their firm's professional. For instance, some of those questions would be along the lines of, you know, given my financial situation, why should I choose a brokerage account? Do the math for me. How much would I pay per year for a typical brokerage account? What would make those fees more or less? What services would I receive for those fees? And so there would definitely be a section of the form that would have potential questions for the retail investor to ask. This form would also be filed with the SEC as a new C form, CRS via EDGAR, and it's required to be delivered to each retail investor at the beginning of the relationship, and for existing clients, it is to be delivered before or at the time that a new account is opened or that there is a change to an existing account that materially alters the nature and scope of the relationship. Now, all the information on this form must be true and not omit any material facts or be misleading in any way.
So it's 10B,
yes,
right? 10B
right.
Regulation.
Exactly. It would be available to the public on the SEC public disclosure website. And as a visual, the SEC has released 3 mock-ups to show what a CRS form could look like. However, they're very clear to say that simply using the mock-ups that they provided or samples would not be enough to satisfy the disclosure obligations. These forms need to be customized. There's also the requirement that the broker-dealer retain a copy of each form, CRS, for 6 years.
So in the case of the dual registrant who's now presenting to the client the comparison between their duties as a broker and their duties as an investment advisor, do they then have to declare which hat they're wearing on a particular transaction?
Yes. So they would have to also provide the form. There is the one form that has a comparison of the broker-dealer services and the investment advisory services so that the client could actually see what the difference is, and the professional would need to say which role that they are.
Sorry, Fred, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
No, that was a great question, Sandy. To me, the most interesting thing, when you read all through the 400 and some odd pages about the CRS, was this concept of a layered disclosure of compensation, where because the CRS can be no more than 4 typewritten pages or the equivalent, it can only make general disclosures. But then the SEC says, without really getting into much detail, that as you start making individual recommendations, you have to provide more detailed compensation disclosures or fee and commission disclosures. And I think that's going to be a little bit problematic. I mean, I don't know if people are doing that right now, but it seems to me that the disclosures now are more general, and this is saying that they've got to get more specific. But it's kind of vague, so I don't know what really to say about it other than what I just said. So, okay. Sandy, I just wanted to point that out.
No, I appreciate that. Jim, I think you may have addressed this the first time you spoke, but just for clarity, other than sort of intuiting a definition from the RIA reg to the BI reg, is there anything else you think that we need to look at as broker-dealers in the other reg to proceed?
I think there's, you know, obviously there's no requirement, Sandy, in the SEC in putting forth these proposals were very clear that there was not going to be a uniform standard, and that from a regulatory perspective, they were going to continue to treat the broker-dealer community and RIA communities separately. However, I think as we've been discussing throughout, I mean, it becomes pretty apparent that there's a convergence of what those regulatory obligations are, and that convergence draws from, you know, three areas. It draws from the historical broker-dealer suitability concept and the regulations and FINRA rules behind that, the RIA disclosure and fiduciary concepts, and as Fred and Brad talked about, I think the third leg of that stool is the DOL fiduciary rule. So there is most definitely a convergence, and I think for the broker-dealers who now have this kind of FINRA plus disclosure standard and Reg BI, to the extent it gets finalized, you know, the supervisory procedures and processes regarding disclosures in terms of assessing conflicts and whether they're material and the closures surrounding those conflicts, those are all RIA industry well-accepted concepts that, you know, every firm out there manages as part of their business and as part of their supervisory and compliance obligations on the RIA side of the house. So for the dual registered firms, you can draw from there. For the solely registered firms, I think they need to consider those concepts and how they can draw from those concepts to the extent this rule does get finalized and use those concepts as building blocks to satisfy what we see in Reg BI regarding these disclosure of conflicts requirements that, again, if it gets finalized and it gets passed, that will ultimately be imposed on the brokerage industry. These are not new concepts, but they're being pulled from these different areas, as I said at the start. And I think in that way, this may just be the start of that convergence as it continues to move forward.
Okay. So, Jamie, what, if any, reaction have we gotten from FINRA?
Sandy, so it appears to us that FINRA will keep lockstepping with the SEC. FINRA affirmatively said in very public places that they are supporting the SEC, with the most recent evidence being FINRA's proposal, which you discussed, to revise its suitability rule, Rule 2111, to make it match Reg BI, in that FINRA's rule would no longer have the condition that a broker needs control over the account in order to have the obligation. The timing of FINRA's comment period for their proposal supports FINRA being in lockstep with the SEC. The comments on FINRA's proposed rule must be received by June 19th, while the comments on Reg BI must be received by the SEC by August 7th. So if Reg BI is enacted, it appears likely that FINRA's amended suitability rule will be enacted as well.
And that would be the amendment to the quantitative piece, which takes out control over the excessive trading. Correct.
That's correct.
So now a broker would not only be liable if they were churning, which is intentional excessive trading, but also if they were negligent in recommendations, which would lead to excessive trading, whether or not they had control over the account.
Correct.
And so, you know, this is all, there's a lot going on, both at FINRA and the SEC, but there's also quite a bit going on in individual states, Connecticut, Illinois, Maryland, Nevada, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and New York all have proposals relating to a standard of care for broker-dealers, which we are keeping an eye on and which we have sort of documented in a chart. We're updating it as we get more information that will be accessible to the callers online. So we sort of refer you to that source of information, and our intention is to update them if additional states come to the forefront with new standard of care obligations. And as these various statutes and bills and proposals work their way through the legislative system. With that, Fred, I'm going to hand it over to you for addressing questions that have been pre-populated to us through email.
Okay, well, let me actually ask you and Jim a question as my question to get. If you know, I know there's a chance that this won't get through, that it, that these are controversial in some ways, and they got to get, they'd like to get at least four or perhaps all five commissioners to agree, and there's got to be some turnover in the process. But I've looked at this, I'm sort of thinking, well, by the time they get comments and they rewrite it, maybe repropose it, anyway, get to a final, it could be early to mid next year. And then if they give a 6 to 12 month period before it applies for people to get their systems in place, it seems to me we're looking at like January 1, 2020, July 1, 2020. So assuming it goes through, Jim and Sandy, do you agree with those dates? Is that roughly correct?
I think it's roughly correct, Fred. You know, while I'll use this analogy. You know, I referenced the footnote that referred back to 1994. You know, Sandy at the start talked about how some of this related back to Dodd-Frank. Some folks may be familiar with the SEC's attempts to make some rulemaking in the retail space back in 2006 that was turned over on appeal. So while all this has some history to it and may seem a little long in the tooth, the reality is when it comes to these three particular proposals, we are in the first few miles of a marathon, and many things can occur during a marathon. Commissioner Pivovar has already announced that he will not be seeking a renewal of his term. I believe.
Jim, let me just interrupt there. Just that I want to get to the questions because we're running out of time, but I don't want to cut you off in the middle of something either. So give us your bottom line, and then we'll move on.
I agree with you. It's going to be a year or two. It'll be at least approximately a year before a final rule is passed, and there will be another year for implementation.
That's great. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt on that, but I'm getting worried about the time.
No, my apologies.
I agree.
there you go. Quick. Okay, now, everybody, I'd like for you to go bang, bang, bang as much as you can as we go through the pre-submitted questions, because if we can, I'd like to get through all these and maybe open it up for a couple of questions. Number one, Tracy's. One of the people listening has a CRS question. Their broker-dealer and their RIA are controlled but separate entities. Would they hand out the dual registrant CRS or the broker-dealer one or the RIA one? How would they handle that?
So if the professional is duly registered, then they would use the one form that is the comparison between the two situations. So there are three proposed templates or samples. So they would use the one that it's actually entitled, which type of account is right for you, brokerage, investment advisory, or both. So that would be the disclosure form to use, one form.
But only for the dual registrant.
Yeah. Sandy, on to you. What do you think about non-ERISA government 403B plans? Would they be subject to advice that has to be in the best interest standard of care or not?
I think it would fall under the qualifications as to what falls within Reg BI. In other words, is it a commissioned account versus an asset fee-based account, which would move it over to the IRA reg? And so if it's a commissioned account, and the advice is being given to a retail customer. So if it's the advice is being given to a plan sponsor, then we might get back into the situation you and I discussed before about whether that really qualifies as a retail customer under this regulation, right? So it would have to be a retail account, in other words, a brokerage account to a retail customer.
Yeah, so if they're advising a school district, then it's not. But if they're advising an individual teacher, then it is.
Exactly.
All right. Jamie, just throw out a few ideas on the kind of documentation that people should be retaining under the best interest standard of care of Reg BI. What do you think that broker-dealers and advisors should have to document that they're doing it right if it becomes a rule?
Well, as we've discussed, the form CRS should be the initial outreach to the client. The broker should also make sure that he or she develops a retail customer's investment profile, which, as Sandy had mentioned, is similar to the Know Your Customer rule. It has, you know, the age, their investments, financial situation, needs, tax status, investment objectives, experience, time horizon, liquidity needs, risk tolerance, and any other information that the retail customer may disclose to the broker-dealer in connection with the recommendation. And then, again, for the broker-dealer, just to make sure they have the appropriate written supervisory procedures and disclosures in keeping with Reg BI.
You know, in looking at the words that Brad mentioned that also struck me in the proposed Reg BI were that they making the recommendation the individual or the entity and the entity have to exercise reasonable diligence, care, skill, and prudence. Those to me are process words. Like you have to go through a process to develop a recommendation. And from and spoken only as an ERISA guy and not as a FINRA person. I think for good risk management purposes, I'd probably like to see documentation retained of what that process is. Are you using software to do the asset allocation and to select the particular funds? Then have that retain that the input, the process, and the output in some form where it's retrievable. But again, I have a very limited view. I'm an ERISA guy, but I think that would be good risk management. So, Brad, looking at plan record keepers for 401k plans, they've got the platform, they've got the call center, and at that call center there's an 800 line, and that's the person is a registered rep of a broker-dealer answering the 800 number at the call center. What do you think? What do you think about how that's going to apply under Reg BI?
Well, I think it's going to come down to whether you're making a recommendation or not on that call, and in that sense, it's sort of similar to the analysis we were doing in response to the issues presented by the DOL fiduciary rule. Are you providing information in response to questions, or are you actually making recommendations about what people should do? And I think that's where the decision is going to be, is to what extent are the folks on those lines able to make recommendations, and if so, then you have to answer the questions about to what degree are we documenting that, how are we handling that.
And also, because there would be a requirement that there has to be a CRF sent out,
right,
there must be some standard at the beginning before the conversation takes place that tells the caller what they are or can and cannot say, right? Because if there's no standard and all of a sudden what should have been an education becomes advice, you've now violated the CRS rule.
Yeah, because you didn't hand out the CRS. Yeah. The next question is about some of the differences between Reg BI and the fiduciary interpretation for RIAs. I think Jim has already answered that. By the way, we're sending out a notice tomorrow where in 2 weeks we're going to do a call similar to this that's going to deal with only with the SEC's interpretation of the standard of care for investment advisors. So if you haven't gotten that question fully answered from your perspective, be on that other call. And we'll go into in a lot more detail. Again, another question was about a comparison of the DOL and the Reg BI, the best interest rules. We went into some detail on that. The next question is, does the best interest standard expose broker-dealers to greater litigation risk? So Tracy or Jamie, one of you guys jump
sure.
in here.
This is Tracy. I'll take that one briefly. I mean, any new requirement or standard necessarily provides new compliance burdens and therefore creates potential litigation. So, yes.
That's the short of it. And now that you've got, you know, you're going to have a contractual document out there that says what your duties are and what your responsibilities are, you have the ability of getting not just transactional point of sale issues, but also misrepresentations and omissions. So, yeah.
Very much.
Yeah, I just to be clear, Reg BI does not create a private right of action. We're talking about claims being enhanced because of issues related to Reg BI.
Jim, can I jump real quick? I think what's going to happen is what's happened historically with other SEC rulemaking. After the rules are finalized and the implementation period passes, and you and I said that will be a couple years from now, the following year, this is going to be a priority in the SEC priorities letter. Examiners are going to go out in the field. It's going to be within the scope of their examination, probably a priority matter within the scope. And they're going to be looking for folks who, after the implementation period, are not in compliance. And if the issues are serious enough, they're going to refer those matters to the enforcement division. And those firms that are subjected to that have the risk of enforcement actions being brought against them.
So there might not be an enforcement action for some time. Jim, I would say that there will be, however, claims filed in arbitration, notwithstanding the fact that there's no private right of action under Reg BI, because it's been my experience that a lack of private right of action has never stopped anybody from making an allegation. And they will be quoting, front and center, Reg BI.
And I think, following up on what Jim said, that FINRA has come out and said that they will enforce Reg BI, even though it's a SEC rule. Brad, I just realized I skipped one question. Someone asked that a plan sponsor says to the advisory firm or the broker-dealer and the advisor, says, you guys have got to be 321 fiduciaries for the plan if you want us to hire you. And the question goes on, can we act with fiduciary-like principles and ethics and act only in the client's best interest without signing on as a 321 non-discretionary investment advisory fiduciary? What do you think, Brad?
This is one of those where I would say theoretically yes, but as a practical matter, I don't think it's likely going to be an opportunity for you, simply because even though if we assume that the Fifth Circuit is going to issue the mandate shortly that actually does finally officially kill the DOL rule so that you're not automatically a 321, which is almost in effect what's happening under the DOL fiduciary rule, is really there is no non-fiduciary role if you're advising on, say, the investment lineup for the 401k plan. In essence, you are a 321 under the DOL rule. While we'll be going back to the 1975 rule, which previously a lot of broker-dealer registered reps were operating as if they weren't fiduciaries, I don't think we're going to be applying it the way we were 10 years ago. Just because you're more of a sales side person than an advice side person isn't going to be how DOL looks at it. They're going to actually apply the five parts. They're going to look at whether you're regularly providing advice. Is there a mutual understanding that it's a primary basis with that plan, those plan fiduciaries who are receiving your advice? And I think even under the old rule, with the new interpretation that I think DOL is going to adopt, you will find that there's not much role for a non-321 advisor to a plan. That in practice, over time, your relationship will become fiduciary, even if it doesn't start fiduciary, by nature of the application of that five-part test. That's a discussion for a whole other call, but that's why I say yes. I think you could start out trying to craft a situation where you act the right way but don't accept the legal status. But I think in practice going forward, that legal status will come, even though it's the old 1975 test, because we'll be applying it in a new and more rigorous way.
Thanks. Hey, Stephanie, we've got time to answer one or two questions. Why don't you open up the lines?
Absolutely. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on the phone line will indicate when your line is open, and please state your name before posing your question. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions.
While we're waiting for that, just to finish a thought that I think Jim was heading for, was the fact that, you know, this is, I think it's a great metaphor to say this regulation is the beginning of a marathon, not a sprint. You know, with Commissioner Piwawar leaving and probably Commissioner Pierce at some point before this rule is done, there is a whole political dynamic of uncertainty about who will replace them and who the commissioners will actually be to issue the final rule, which does really have a material impact, even though it's at this point impossible to predict on the future course of the rule.
Stephanie, did anyone sign on?
Yes, it looks like we do have one question. Caller, please go ahead. Your line has been opened.
Hi there, this is Beth. Hey, Fred, I've got a question for you. Just curious as to how Reg BI could apply to 401k plans, because 401k plans are exempted securities. Just would like your thoughts on that.
Yeah, our general feeling is that Reg BI won't apply to advice to plan sponsors about the investment lineup in the plan, but that it would apply to advice to participants. And the reason is that that FINRA has previously said in Regulatory Notice 13-45, and the SEC picked up on that in the proposed Reg BI, that a recommendation to a participant to take a distribution is inherently a recommendation to liquidate the investments in their account and take out cash. And then a second securities transaction that's recommended is how to invest in the IRA. You could even say there's a third one for RIAs, which we can deal with next time, which is that what account to go into, what type of account before any investment decisions are made. But that's RIAs, not broker-dealers. So they focus, both the SEC and FINRA since 2013 have focused on the fact that a recommendation to take a distribution is a recommendation for 403Bs and 401Ks, participant-directed accounts, to liquidate the investments and take out the cash. I don't think it's the same for pension plans, for example, cash balance plans, defined benefit plans, any pooled plans, because the participant doesn't have the authority to sell anything in those plans. So it may be that distribution recommendations and rollover recommendations are not regulated for broker-dealers at all in those cases. But I do see it for 401k and 403b, and I'm really just relying what the SEC and FINRA have said.
But is that only with respect to rollovers? That wouldn't apply to in-plan advice, correct?
You know, it's not clear. At one point, they refer to advice to participants, but I just don't know. I can't answer that. I have seen the SEC raise that issue, though, in SEC examinations where advisors were making recommendations to participants about how to change their investments in the plan. And although this is for investment advisors, and the SEC was. The advisors were getting the accounts, you know, log-on information for the accounts of the participants. And the SEC said to the RIA, how are you supervising those transactions if you're not getting information about them? So at least for investment advisors, I've seen the RIA raise the issue as if the investment advice itself were regulated. That's it. I'm beyond my knowledge now. Anything after this would be shooting from the hip.
Fred, one food for thought, and that is following up on Brad and Jim's comment about the Discord and possible change in commissioners. Remember that the SEC staff had come out with a recommendation in January of 2011, and the SEC commissioners came out with a proposed rule seven years and 3 months later in April of 2018. And so if there is discord among the commissioners, our trajectory of a year and a half for a rule to go into effect may be significantly altered.
Yeah.
Well, this is Brad. Yeah. I'll just throw a thought in there, which is I think there is a real incentive in the Trump administration and for Chair Clayton to get this thing done and done fairly concretely so that it becomes a good regulation that sticks on the books before the next administration takes office. And depending on what happens in the election, we don't know who that might be, whether it's a Trump administration or someone else. So I think they have an incentive to really try to get this done. I just think that the variables in terms of who the commissioners are is going to make it difficult to do that. But I think that's their incentive, and they do want to get it done quickly in a regulatory sense, done quickly. Granted, a regulatory sense is, a year and a half.
Government time. Well, everybody, we're out of time. Thanks so much for dialing in and being part of this conversation. I hope it was good for you. I hope it provided you with useful information. Remember that we're going to be sending you an email that if you want your comrades at work to listen, you can share that link with them. Other than that, in 2 weeks, we're going to do the RIA version of this. So I look forward to talking to you then. Thank you very much. Goodbye.